Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They are the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 17th to the 19th, 2019 at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by The Wargaming Company. Wish you could play a great Napoleonic's wargame that's different from the same old stuff? Try ESR. ESR makes Napoleonic's accessible, a complete system with you as the core commander. Start an army with ESR box sets or use your existing collection. It's meaty enough for diehards, but friendly for newcomers. Visit thewargamingcompany.com. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is a different episode of Wargaming Recon for a few reasons. First of all, there are no guests. I am not joined by my buddy and co-host, Mr. Adrian Benson. And the show's topic, contents, and arrangements were all organized and chosen by one of you. That's right, one of the listeners. And the way this actually happened is we have a listener who is supporting us on our Patreon campaign, and one of the levels there allows a backer to do what I just said, to pick the topic, choose the arrangements, choose what segments we do, the order we do them. Do we not do an intro in the beginning? Do we do it at the end? We can be really zany. And so it's kind of a fun way to mix it up a little bit, to do things that allow us to maybe go outside of our comfort zone a little bit, but also to really kind of deliver the sort of content that listeners like you want, because this is designed and chosen by one of you, not us. So it's really neat that we can do this. And this particular episode, I'm going to call Confessions of a Gamer. And what we're doing in this episode, we're changing the focus of the main part of the show so that instead of an interview or a chat or a review or anything like that, I have 15 questions that our backer, Kyle, has sent to me and would love answers to. So this will be pretty interesting. I have looked at the questions before. I haven't really spent a whole lot of time thinking about them. So we will see how, or if at all, I really how, because it will. But we'll see how that comes into it. And Kyle didn't say I had to do these in the order that they were listed. So I could bounce around, but I won't. So let's start off with the first one. And the first question is, in your opinion, what is the most underrated game? Now, this is a tough one. Of course, it's my opinion, but what criteria am I using? How am I defining underrated? Is it something that maybe is popular, is successful, is well done, but isn't viewed as well received as maybe I think it should be? Is it something that just hasn't been picked up on the radar at all? I don't know. Now, I will say, as difficult as it is for me to pinpoint one game, there is an older game that I love to play, and I haven't played in a while, but I do love to play, that I think got dismissed pretty much because it is a beer and pretzel game. It's a naval combat game. It's one where you are supposed to be able to quickly play, get a few games in, have some fun, and do other stuff as well. So it's not going to really get down to the nitty-gritty on what type of engine do they have, what type of ammo are you loading, none of that. So, of course, that's going to turn off people, and I understand it. But I think a lot of people are like, oh, that's just beer and pretzel game. We don't want to do that kind of thing. That's and didn't really take the time to look at it and go, okay, yes, that's what this is. But you could make it a little bit more, but it also gives you the flexibility to do so many different things. I'm talking about the really fun and I think very enjoyable game, Access and Allies War at Sea. Now, this is put out by Wizards of the Coast, or rather it was, because it's no longer in production. It had pre-painted miniatures. It's a collectible miniatures game, so I know that was another mark against it. You don't know what you're going to get, so why would you do that? And it's pre-painted. Maybe I don't like the paint job and this and that. I think they did a pretty good job. I think it was a labor of love for the designer. They covered many different ships, many different nations. They tried to cover both Atlantic and Pacific theaters of World War II. It's a World War II naval game. It had aerial combat from carriers, some land-based planes. There was objectives that you had to get. There were point-based systems. They used it in scenarios and campaigns. Really tried to get it to be something that was embraced by the community. And there still is a community that loves, absolutely loves this game. I will say I am one of them. I just don't get to play it a whole lot. I have just about everything from the first, I don't know, five sets, six sets. The last one or two sets that came out were ones where I didn't really get invested into it. I didn't buy as much as I would before. With other sets, I'd buy cases and cases and cases of these miniatures to get everything that I wanted and to get enough numbers of stuff. So I still have them here in the studio and I love them. And they're really cool, easy to do. But honestly, I think it can take a lifetime to master. And there's an individual here in New England, Dan Eustace, who does an amazing job where he runs Access and Allies War at Sea at game days, at conventions, and he's really enhanced it using homemade cards. The cards have statistics for them so that they apply to what unit it is. They're named units, so if you're familiar, you can have, like, the Lexington, you can have the Tirpitz, you can have the Bismarck, you can have the Hood, and so forth. But really, he adds extra flavor to it, so it kind of moves a little bit further away from beer and pretzel into a little more depth, but not to the point of losing the positive attributes of being a beer and pretzel kind of game. And I think since it's an older game now, and I think for the reasons that I mentioned about it having those marks against it, that people have dismissed it, and I would say considered an underrated game because of that, you could pick so many other games out there. And I know that's not the question. The question isn't, what would anyone pick? What would other people? It's what I would pick. And I guess this is what I would pick. I would have to go with this and say, Access and Allies were at sea. And people, you should check it out, pick it up. I think prices have started to come down on eBay. You can check on your buy and sell groups on social media and see what you can get there for decent prices. And just have some fun with it. Question number two, what is the most overrated game? Anything by Games Workshop. That's only half in jest. Really, there are so many GW I'm going to say fanboys, but I want to be gender neutral. Fan people, fan persons, fan whatevers, gamers. There are so many GW gamers out there who are blind to the faults with the games, who very easily dismiss what's wrong in their model and method, business model that is, and method. And they are quick to just kind of find excuses for anything that the company does, any way that the games are run. And I think that there's a time and place for games like the type that Games Workshop has produced, things like 40K and, of course, Fantasy. And I would say the better games, anything put up by specialist games, you need to talk about things like Necromunda, Immortheim, Gookamorka, BFG, of course, Blood Bowl, any of those kind of things. But I think like their main games, like 40K Fantasy, stuff like that, or whatever their newer incarnations are, Kill Team and Age of Sigmar, and this and that, or whatever, Death Watch and so forth, I think those are definitely overrated. Just because so many people are like, oh, I don't care. I'm just anything they want, I'm going to do. It doesn't matter. Be quiet and take my money, as the meme goes, although I'm obviously changing that up a little bit. GW games, just for so many reasons, I think are grossly overrated. But I think that's the easy target there. Yeah, it's really. Who isn't going to say that, I guess, is the question. Other than that, I would have to go with like a Flames of War. It has a lot in common, company-wise, with how GW has done stuff, and so I have concerns about that. I think a lot of people quickly got into it thinking, oh, it's a World War II game, 15 mil is a cool scale, so I don't have to spend a lot of time painting. These are all true, and they like the one-stop shop kind of methodology that Battlefront had embraced, and many other companies have too, of course. But I think if you look at it and really kind of see it as a game and how it's played and everything, even knowing that it is organized play focus is not great about it, and a lot that is left to be desired, I could, of course, also many of the same reasons here. I think some people would probably pick Black Powder, but I think it's right on the mark where it is. So I, of course, have to go. I think Fantasy is the better of the two, to be honest. But I think both of them suffer from very similar kind of problems there. Question number three. If you could only bring two games to a desert island, a desert island, I like saying dessert just because it makes me think of ice cream, and I love ice cream. If you could only bring two games to a desert island, what games would you bring? Assume that you can find other shipwrecked players on the island if needed. Now, if I was on a desert island, I'd want to go with something that's going to give me a lot of replay value. Something that I can just kind of dive into and hone. Things that I'm not going to worry about if I lose pieces or things are missing. I honestly would have to pick chess. I think chess is a great game. It's very recognizable, so it'd be easy to replace stuff if something were missing. To find, I don't know what kind of island. Let's say it's a tropical island. To find a coconut shell and whittle it away or something. I don't know. To really get those pieces. And I think there'd be a lot of fun trying out the different moves, seeing what works, what doesn't. Whenever I've played chess, I tend to play as black because I don't know, I enjoy it. And I like having that and just kind of going at it. So I could see that being a game that would be a lot of fun to play again and again and again. If I wanted to go for something else that would have a lot of replay value, I'd have to go for a role-playing game, to be honest. I think when you have that sort of narrative play where you could really go whole theater of the mind and it works really well, or you could go to the point where you can create things to enhance your play, as it were, I think a role-playing game would work. Now, I don't know which one I would pick for system. Obviously, the easy pick is Dungeons and Dragons, but I love Dungeon World that we had played. I enjoy other settings. I love Star Wars, so like a Star Wars one would be really neat to do. Maybe make up one's own. There's just so many options there, but it would definitely be a role-playing game. So I'm realizing it's kind of weird, right? That here on this wargaming podcast, I'm saying, let's play a role-playing game on a desert island, and let's play chess, a board game, which is really a strategy war game, but let's play chess, a board game, and a role-playing game. And I did not mention any really like minis games, no war games or anything like that. So I get that. But I'd have to go with that. If money was no object, this is for question four. If money was no object, which new gaming convention would you attend? So I'm going to interpret this as which new to me gaming convention would I attend? Doesn't have to be a brand new convention because there's only so many cons that come out, right? Honestly, I would really, really, really enjoy going to Historicon, I think. I'm just checking. Does this This doesn't say one new, just which new game. I guess it's implied because it's not conventions. I'd have to pick between Historicon, and I think I'd want to try maybe Salute. So I don't know which one I'd want to go to. So, like, Historicon's cool, right? Because it's here in the States. It's easy to get to, and I'm not one who loves traveling far. So I could potentially just drive, because I also have a fear of heights and flying, and I have a lot of fears. I'm riddled with them. That's a problem. So Historicon, but then I could also go to Salute, right? And I'd get to go across the pond, so I'd have to fly, which is good and bad. But go across the pond, I'd be in London, maybe turn it into a whole vacation kind of thing. I've wanted to go to London, want to go to England. I think it'd be a lot of fun. Maybe see some of the Wargamers who I've gotten to know online, who have come on and been on the show. Maybe see them there. So that would be really neat. I think the idea of a Salute has me more excited, honestly, than a Historicon. But I get a list of ones that I want to go to. So, like, NashCon's on my list. Historicon's on my list. I got Salute is on my list. I got so many, really, that I want to go. There's a bunch of New England I want to hit up. I want to hit up a Gen Con sometime. An Adepticon is on my list. I also would like to hit up Enfilade. And, I mean, there's a bunch. But if I only had to pick one, I think I'd have to go to Salute. If I could get myself on the plane and fly. Otherwise, it's Historicon. And I know I'm hedging my bets, but it's my show, and so I get to do that. That's what we're doing. So that's question number four. And let's see. Question number five. The apocalypse is coming. That sounds scary. You only have time to save one type of war game for the people of Earth. Do you save paper, cardboard, war games, or miniatures? So I don't know what type of apocalypse it is. Maybe people think it doesn't matter. To me, it matters. Because, like, are we talking zombies? Are we talking vampires? Is it plague? Is it, I don't know, thermonuclear war? Climate change? What kind of apocalypse? Is there food? Or, like, are things still working? Or are we talking, like, Cormac McCarthy's The Road, right? And it matters. I think either way, I'd have to go with a board game style one. So something with cardboard, something with, you know, tokens or paper, things like that. Mainly because it's portable, it's easier to bring, shove it in a backpack, probably not as heavy or bulky as a miniatures one. So if you have to get up and go, no matter what type of apocalypse it is, probably uses less energy to play. So again, if the apocalypse is here, maybe you don't have enough food, you don't have medical supplies, you don't have energy, you're not in a safe place, maybe the robots have risen, I don't know. You're not going to want to be like, hold on, Terminators. I got to pack up my bolt-action armor here and get it all going. And then also, like, you might have a hard time finding opponents. So it's easier to solo game, solo war game, board game-ish, cardboard paper one, than it would be a minis one. So that has to be taken into account. And then also, like, breakage and lost stuff. I think it's easier to kind of replace a token or a chit, right, than it is to replace a broken mini. Your glue's going to run out. You're going to have a problem there. So I think that's something to take into consideration. Number six, what is your biggest gaming purchase regret? It can be a game or a gaming-related items. This is easy. So, so easy. It is... And I'm going to say it just because, well, I am. It is Everlasting Wet Palette by Redgrass Games. Now, I think it's important for me to note, I got it from their Kickstarter. I backed their Kickstarter because Alyssa Faden of Enfilade had sponsored that episode, given us the money for that, so that we could back it and cover that Kickstarter and the palette, because like me, she's a fan of wet palettes and she loves painting stuff and it looked really cool and aesthetically it's beautiful. But then between my experience dealing with them, the customer service, or should I say lack of good customer service, it was terrible. Just so bad. Some of the worst I've ever experienced in my life, really. And the fact that the product is inferior, it's poorly made, poorly designed, poorly implemented, it doesn't work great, There's so many problems that they weren't really willing to address or fix any of them or deal with any of that. It is probably the worst review we've ever done on the show. Not in terms of quality for us, but in terms of the product just being awful. It is so bad. I actively discourage people from getting it. I say, if you don't know if you want it or not, check out our review. But in my experience, it's not good. You'd be the judge. But really, unless they fix things, I think these are problems. So maybe think twice about it. Because it is dreadful. It is really so bad. So I thoroughly regret that. If you're talking stuff that I've actually used my own money for, or the show's money for, I'm going to say I actually regret buying a Chaos War Mammoth for Warhammer 40K, or I could actually use it for both, really. I mean, it's a fantasy thing, but I could use it for both by Forge World. And I had come into a bunch of money at one point, and I was so excited. I was like, I want to buy a Forge World thing because they're really expensive. It's cool. So I bought this thing, and I was just kind of overwhelmed by it. And I never really used it, and I started to work on it, started painting it, but it's haphazard. So I have it, but it's not in a great state because of that. I have all this stuff, and so it's just been sitting there for years, and now I don't play the game. And I definitely regret that. I wish I had spent that money on something else instead. What? I don't know, but that's not a question on here yet. Or is it? Let's see. Number seven. Nope, not yet. What is the farthest distance you have traveled primarily for gaming? Now, I have to do the math on what that distance equates, but I can tell you it's going from where I'm at to Portland, Maine to go play at Huzzah, and that's about, Adrian, if he was here, he would correct me. I'm gonna say that's about like a 2.5 hour drive, I think, two-ish, maybe, and that's far. For me, it feels it. I'm someone who doesn't like to go distances, partly because I have so many anxiety and issues, which I've talked about on the show before. So, tune into that episode to hear about how I'm just like full of, I'm riddled with things. But yeah, that's definitely the furthest I've ever gone. Unless money's no option and I go to Historicon or a Salute, in which case that would be the furthest then. So, we'll see. But yeah, Huzzah is the one for me, for my furthest, and absolutely worth it. Just such a good convention, wonderful people. It's not part of the question, but again, I don't care. And it's just as great. It's worth every moment. It's worth going over that really scary bridge for me, which no one else is going to understand, but for me, bridges are a problem. And the time and everything being in the car. It's worth it, and being there is amazing, and just really, I look forward to it. It's something I look forward to all year long that I can't wait to do, that I thoroughly enjoy. And I would travel further to go to Huzzah. Not like hours further, but I would travel further. Please don't move, Huzzah. Please stay where you are. But I would. Number eight. Have you ever LARPed? Would you ever LARP? For those of you who don't know, LARP is a live action role play. I have not LARPed. I have friends who have. Friends who have done what they call boffing, where it's almost kind of like practice for LARPing. You use foam weapons and you beat each other up, basically, is what it is. It feels like a guy thing. But you practice, air quotes as it were, because they have combats and they have things around here. There's something called Tav that's popular. Where they, it's like Tales of Valor, I think is what it comes out to. And it's a live action role play. They go to like an old Boy Scout camp or something like that once or twice a year, and they have a whole thing, and they belong to this whole realm system in different parts of the country, or in different kingdoms, and all that kind of stuff. And you pledge fealty, as it were, to the reigning monarchs of the area. You get your armor, and you make it, or you buy it, or whatever. So you put your armor on, or whatever you're dress as, so you cosplay, and then you roleplay. And if you're a wizard, right, and you're casting spells, you have like little bean bags, I guess, as it is, and you throw them at someone, different colored ones, and if you hit them, your spell is successful, and so forth. Same for healing, and then this close combat kind of stuff, or whatever. Rangers and archers shooting, and they have the bows, and then with the foam. And anyway, I think it's amazing. I love it. I think it's kind of a cool way for a gamer to get into shape a little bit because you get an exercise, you're moving, you have to work out. And it'd be great for someone like me who could benefit from all of those things. So I think there's value there. I think it's really cool to kind of add another dimension to something that is very 2D. Because if you're looking just at what's on the paper for a role play, that's 2D. You could say if all you're doing is closing your eyes and imagining what's going on in that theater of the mind, you could say that's even fewer dimensions, I guess, because you're just kind of using fewer senses, as it were. Yeah. But I think it's rather dynamic. I think it can be a lot of fun and action-packed. I also think it gets a bad rap. There's a movie with something Michael Scott. Sean Michael Scott, is that his name? The actor who played Stifler in the American Pie series. And I think it's called something like, I can't remember, like Big Brother or something like that. But where him and this other character kind of become mentors to these high school kids who are kind of on the fringe, I guess you could say. And one of the things that happens is these high school kids are really, one of them anyway, is into LARPing. So they go and they LARP, and there's this whole big thing. And I remember seeing them being like, oh my goodness, that's so cool. And one of my friends who's into LARP asked me if I'd seen that. And he was like, you know, it's not always really like that. And I said, oh, really? That's a shame because I thought that was really cool. And he's like, if you thought that was cool, but what it actually is way better than that. I was like, really? And I got so excited. So, no, I've not LARPed. I would LARP in a heartbeat. And I'm sure that's going to get me some hate from Adrian and some other people, but I don't really care because, again, my show. Number nine, what has been your best gaming deal? A yard sale find, thrift store find, trade, etc. So, there's a few ways I could go about answering this. One of the great things about doing the show is companies send us things to cover and to review. They send them to us, we get to keep them. So I could say a great deal is we've gotten some really cool stuff that we've gotten to keep. We've gotten some amazing product by Dwarven Forge that we got to keep, which is amazing. Not just that we get to keep it, but it's amazing stuff. We've done content with it. We've done all sorts of stuff. I love the company. I love the people who work there and who run it. I love the product. I love it. It's like, that's a great deal, right? And there's a whole bunch of things. Warlord sent us the Black Powder Second Edition rules that we get to keep. Again, same kind of thing. Now, is that a great deal? Yeah. I'm not sure if that's really what the question's and you know what it's intending. So, if you're again talking about something that really cost me directly something, there's still a few ways I could go about it, but I think the best answer is most recently, Dean Emerson from the MHWA, Maine Historical Wargamers Association, was selling an army fully painted on, he actually mentioned it on Facebook, I think, on one of the Facebook buy sell pages or something. In 10 mil for a really good price. Not cheap, mind you, but when you figured out how much stuff there was, how many figures, it's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of figures. It's all painted, it's all based, almost. No, actually, it wasn't based, all painted though. And for American War of Independence, it had Americans, it had Brits, and so forth. I saw it, I jumped on it. I was like, it's worth the money. So for me, that's probably my best deal because it was easily like $1,000 worth of stuff. And I got a significant discount on it. And it turned out it was something actually that Dean had bought on, at Huzzah actually from one of like the, what they tend to do, it's kind of unofficial, but on the final day of Huzzah on the Sundays after the games, whatever, if there's any open games. Attendees can come and they can kind of have like a flea market. So they put whatever stuff that they want to move on and how much they're willing to take or whatever. So I guess someone had this stuff and then Dean had purchased it from that. And then I purchased it from Dean, which will be used for Black powder, actually, I think is what we're doing with it. And that reminds me, I have to finish basing it, but we'll get that done. So I think that was probably a really good deal, or at least the most recent really good deal. There've been others of various types, but that's really a standout for me for that. I know some people get things like dirt cheap, which is kind of crazy. They'll get like, I don't know, $100 worth of gaming stuff for like a fiver. Or they'll find a copy of HeroQuest, brand new, unpunched, that someone was selling at a yard sale, and it cost them $10, and the person felt bad about taking $10 for it or whatever. And that kind of stuff doesn't happen to me. Or some people, they'll go to like their local Savers or like any of those kind of thrift stores, Salvation Army thrift store or whatever, and they'll get a game, and it's like a, I don't know, like in a $50 game, where they paid a buck or something, and like just that doesn't happen to me, but I'm always intrigued by people who do have that happen to them. I just don't tend to have that kind of luck, so I'm usually the one who's like overpaying or whatever. So it's kind of neat to have gotten a good deal, but like it worked out for Dean because he needed some spending money for stuff, and I got a thing, so that's cool, and it helped out with the show and all that kind of stuff. So that's something that I like. I will say there's a really cool buy sell no it's a pay it forward sorry pay it forward group on Facebook. It's like Wargamer Pay It Forward that I would suggest you look into and to join. And what they do is it's people who have like war games. I'm talking, you know, like Avalon Hill kind of stuff or GMT sort of things, where it's a lot of Hex Encounter kind of stuff, but cardboard games, board games, all that sort of stuff, where they'll post, we have game XYZ and first person, whatever, and the person sends it out. But then if you get it, you then have to make offers of games you're willing to give away until someone takes it. So I fully stickered, including I think one or two expansions. And so I have it, and then I did a bunch of offers and no one wanted any of this stuff. So then I offered to have sent brand new from a place, something that they wanted. So I ended up or so to have a new thing went out. So I still made out on the deal because even if they wouldn't have to sticker any of it, that made a difference, and it shouldn't, but it did. And this kind of leads into the next question. Number 10, do you clip your counters? Do you sleeve your cards? No, I do not clip my counters. I think they look better. And honestly, I think it'd be great if the game design companies just sold counters where they were pre-clipped. I know why they don't, because it's a cost thing and design thing and manufacturing. I get it. I still wish that they did. And I know people say it makes it easier to pick them up. I don't find one way or the other. I don't have a ton of experience. Adrian has more, and I've talked with him about this, because I'm like, what's the deal with clipping counters? I don't understand, really. What's going on here? And he's like, people think it makes it easier. And I'm like, I don't think it does, but okay, if they think it does, then great for them. But a good time for me is not sitting there spending 3 hours clipping counters. Saying, okay, now we got this corner. Now we got this corner. Now we got this corner. Now we got this one. Yay, I did the first one. Like, for me, that's not a great time. If you like it, way to go. Lots of power to you. Not for me. So, no, I do not clip my counters. I can't anticipate ever clipping my counters. If I bought a game secondhand and had clipped counters, I would not be like, oh, you clipped those counters. How dare you? It's been sullied. That's not what I would do or think. I just don't want to spend the time doing it. I want to spend the time playing the game. When it comes to cards, I do sleeve them though. So way, way, way back, one of my starts in gaming, depending on what type of game you're talking about, one of my starts was playing Magic the Gathering way back in the day of like beta and unlimited and limited and all that kind of stuff. And I would buy sleeves for the cards. It's kind of something I learned from collecting baseball cards, hockey cards, things like that. You put them in a thing and you protected them. And I collected comics. You get the comics. You get a plastic bag for the comics. An acid-free board. You put the board in behind it. Put it in the bag. And you put it in a box and you're done. So to me, cards are the same way. So any of the collectible card games that I played, they go into that. Now, if we're talking about a war game that has cards, I don't sleeve them. And I don't know why, except the only difference I can think of in my head, and I haven't really thought about this a whole lot, is that something like a collectible card game, whether it's a Magic, whether it's a Pokemon, a Yu-Gi-Oh, or pick one, I don't care which, there's a lot of shuffling in those. You're probably not shuffling a lot with your muskets and tomahawks. Yeah, it does get shuffled a little, but it's not to the extreme as it is with a collectible card game. Does this make logical sense? I don't know, but it makes sense to me in my head, which is like a whole nother universe. It's kind of a jumbled mess in there, so I don't know. That's what I'm going with. And I guess maybe I should rethink this whole shuffling of cards. Question number 11. What is your favorite historical period for wargaming? What is your least favorite? So for me, my favorite probably is American War of Independence, American Revolution. It's really close. I love ancients. And I know a lot of people don't, but I'm just so drawn to Imperial Romans, Republican Romans, just all that kind of stuff really fascinates me, and I'm really into it. My least favorite, like, there's a lot. I'm not gonna be someone who's like, yay, let's do, I don't know, Spanish Succession or Colonial Wars or, I don't know, the American West or just like any of those. And I guess really, like, I don't love Napoleonic gaming either, and I know a lot of people do, but it's not like I hate it or dislike it. There's none of that. It just doesn't get me going like other stuff. Number 12, who would be your dream guest to have on your show? He's dead, so this will never happen, but I would love Mr. Featherstone. I think that would be really cool. I'd love Gary Gygax. That would also be really cool. I'm really, with Gary, I'm really interested to see about his roots with wargaming and with chainmail and all of that, and how much of that really kind of stuck with him even after he moved on to implementing Dungeons and Dragons. And with Don Featherstone, it's just, he's done so much with all these books and everything. I think that would be fascinating to really kind of have and see what's done with that. Now, if we're talking about living people, I have a few who I would really like to have. And although I rail against Games Workshop, I'd love to have like Andy Chambers on and Rick Priestley. And I'd love to have Alessio Cavatore and Jervis Johnson, Gav Thorpe. I'd love to have all these fellows on. I would really love to have Paul Sawyer on. And not because of his work with with Warlord. I fell in love with his humor when he was an editor of White Dwarf magazine. So I'd love all that. I think that'd be fascinating. And these are people who have varied interests with historicals and with other types of war games and with different business areas of expertise and game design and all that kind of stuff. So all that would be very fascinating to me. So I think that's something that I would really like to know and see how it goes. Do I think they'll ever come on? Probably not. But I would love to. So if any of you have a, you know, an in, please get in touch with me. Number 13. Have you ever lost your temper with an opponent? No. I get annoyed with some opponents, and I get frustrated or angry at myself, but I don't think I've ever been like, oh man, I hate that opponent. That person's so awful. It's more like, I don't understand why a person did such a thing or why they behaved a way or something that they've done just kind of frustrated or annoyed me, but not caused me to lose my temper. Number 14, have you ever cheated while playing a game? Yes. I presume people want to know more, and I could leave it at yes, but I have absolutely been known to cheat playing games with my kid. With my eldest, I'll cheat to make it easier for her to win. And not all the time, but sometimes. She's 4.5, so there's that kind of going on. Is that cheating, or is that just parenting? I don't know. And the fact that I don't know, maybe that's a problem. But let's go with parenting on that one, I guess. And number 15, this is the final question. A gaming company executive offers you your absolute dream job in the gaming industry. I don't know what that is, so I don't know how they know what it is. But going on with the question, but to take the job, you have to donate a kidney to the executive. Would you take the job? No. And I'll tell you why. Even if it was my absolute dream job, if it was, I don't know what my dream, let's just for hypothetical sake, let's say the dream job is doing the show full time. Doing it where I can work from home, where I get paid and don't have to spend any of my own money to go and fly and go to Salute, go to Historicon, go to Empalade or whatever, to cover all these things, to do all this cool stuff, and to really do a lot of video production and audio production and all that kind of stuff. Let's say it was all that, the money was amazing, to the point that it would pay for all the stuff that I needed to pay for, where we could do things like my wife really wants to stay at home and raise our kids, like we could do that. I wouldn't have to worry about paying for their schooling or any of that kind of stuff. Let's say it was all these amazing things, right, that I did all that. I'd still say no. And not probably for the reason that you would imagine. Some people might say no for the principle of it all. No, I'm not gonna let them blackmail me and do that. Or no, how dare they be so entitled or whatever. The reason no for me is I have a fear of needles. And we'll keep on going back to my fears. But I have a fear of needles. In order to donate a kidney, presuming I was a match or whatever, would involve general anesthesia, would involve surgery, would involve getting cut open, would involve going to the hospital. It would involve many, many things that cause me great anxiety, crippling anxiety, and I couldn't overcome that for the job. And just bringing it to another position, for many, many years in the state in which I live, before you got married, you were required to have blood work done. And I don't know exactly why, but I'm going to presume it was to make sure that you didn't have any sort of infectious diseases that you would pass on to your soon-to-be spouse, or to make sure that you weren't secretly related or anything like that. Thankfully, that is no longer a requirement here, because if it were, I really would have had to worked very, very hard to overcome my needle phobia in order to get the blood work done so that I could get married. And it would have been a challenge, a huge challenge. So if it would have been a huge challenge for me to do that, to marry the love of my life, you can be darn sure doing it for a job, no matter how amazing the job would be, no matter how much of a dream job it would be darn near impossible. So there we go. I don't know, maybe I should say yes, that I would do it. Maybe that makes it more interesting, but I know I wouldn't. It's just not something that I would do. If I could do something else to make that happen, maybe. I don't know what it is. Yeah, I don't know. I'm really interested what all of you think about these questions, and I'd love to hear if you have a favorite question that I did, what your favorite question is, and what your answer is to it. So feel free to send that to us. We are at jonathan@wargamingrecon.com or on social media. We're on all the things as Wargaming Recon. I want to mention also that we recently did a giveaway on our Facebook page where we got to, what was it, 1,750 likes, so people who are following and liking the page. One person at random won a kit from Things from the Basement. We will be doing another giveaway, a bigger giveaway, when we reach 2,000 likes of our Facebook page. So please make sure you like it, wargamingrecon.com on Facebook. Share it with your friends, your family, get them to like it as well, so that a lucky person will win a bigger thing from Things in the Basement, I believe. And I think they actually will have two winners for that as well. So that'll be coming up. We have some other cool things happening. And then, of course, with this episode, it's the first time you got to hear our new intro and outro featuring the ad for the Wargaming Company. So that's really cool. We are so excited that they are a sponsor for the show now, and we officially announced it on social media a little while ago, but this is when it begins, and we are just delighted for their support. And I will say, the first thing that I did when their check came in, and after I cashed it, I said, I know what I'm spending this on. So I bought a Canon EOS 70D DSLR mirrorless camera. I actually bought it off Adrian. It's an old one he had, and some other stuff because I want to do more digital stuff instead of just using a webcam because that's so terrible. So I want to learn how to use this camera and do some digital stuff here and kind of get that going and get more tutorials and stuff happening and more video work going and to see how that goes and try to be more professional is what it is. I hope everyone really enjoyed this episode. As I said, check out Wargaming Recon Patreon. That's patreon.com/wargamingrecon because you too can become a backer for as little as $1 a month. Or you can pick the level that Kyle did. I believe that's the Army Rations level, is what I believe it's called. And if you do that, you can have us just come on and do the show as you would like us to do it. I mean, we do have some editorial control there. We're not just gonna, I don't know, we're not gonna be like, yay, GW all day long or something crazy like that. Or do a show standing upside down or whatever. But if you're willing to go on and do, yeah, that's Army HQ, that's 25 a month or more. You get to produce one episode of the podcast. You pick the topic, the order the segments are done, and which ones we do. And so you could have that going on as well. And as I said, we are on all the things as Wargaming Recon, all the social media and everything. And just really, thank you for listening to this episode. I know it's different than you since I've done an episode by myself. And a long time since we've done something in this format, so it's kind of really neat. I'm looking forward to seeing how all of you respond to that. Maybe we should do more stuff like this, or maybe not. I don't know. But we'll see how it goes. And, well, you know the drill. No matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how much time you're trying to figure out what one type of war game you want to save for the people of Earth when the apocalypse is coming. You know that you have to, you gotta, you need to keep on gaming.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by The Wargaming Company. Wish you could play a great Napoleonic's war game that's different from the same old stuff? Try ESR. ESR makes Napoleonic's accessible, a complete system with you as the core commander. Start an army with ESR box sets or use your existing collection. It's meaty enough for diehards, but friendly for newcomers. Visit thewargamingcompany.com. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 17th to the 19th, 2019 at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.